This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And welcome to another episode of the Spoiler Room. I am your host, as always, Mark the Movie Man, and it is the eve before Halloween, my favorite time of year, our favorite holiday. I've been covering horror-themed podcasts. Hope you've checked those out. And tonight we're going to talk Halloween films and horror films in general, but we're going to try to lean towards the Halloween films. And I've got a great group of individuals, and more may be joining us shortly. Let's start right off. First off, we have Mr. Gonzerific Films himself. Andrew Shearer is back in the spoiler room. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm glad to be called part of a great group, Mark.
Well, we're glad to have you back here, Andrew. And we've got a new crew member in the spoiler room here. We have Paul Salzar.
Salzar is perfect, yep. Salzar.
I'm horrible with names. My reviews, I'm the same way. Paul, say hello to everyone out there.
Hello, everyone out there.
Hey, there you go. Always good to have a fresh face, new blood, fresh meat in the room. And then, of course, we have Mr. Moviocrity, Mr. Scott Davis. How are you tonight?
What? Greatest time of year, Mark. I'm doing good.
It is. And what Spoiler Room podcast talking about horror films would be complete without Mr. Tony Estrada, Tiger Power himself? Mr. Estrada, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good.
Oh, look at you. The unveiling. You got the whole Halloween getup. For those who don't see it in our podcast, Mr. Estrada's gone all out. He's got spider webs, a cloak. He's looking kind of scary tonight.
Hey, if we're going to talk horror films, I got to bring in the spirit, right?
I was going to say, you definitely are in the spirit. I mean, most I could do is put up my Predators poster, so...
Hey, that's still a badass, though.
Yeah, it is. So tonight we're talking Halloween horror, and we haven't done headlines in a while, and it's not really Halloween themed, but we've got to mention it because it is a movie podcast, and I just got to brief. This week exploded, internet exploded, geeks exploded, all in their pants, all over the news from Marvel Comics on the next films that will be coming out from now until I hit retirement age. I don't know if any of you guys have, I'm sure some of you have followed it. I got to ask the opinion because I feel like old man on the lawn. Do you think announcing this many movies this far ahead kind of ruins some of it for you? I know it does for me. I miss the mystery from films. Paul, let's go with you first since you're new in the room. I mean, announcements like this, just like DC did, I don't know. Personally, I think it's too much. What do you think?
I actually had the opposite. I was just like, ah, yes, Civil War. Oh, my God, Infinity. Oh my God. Oh, and Captain Marvel. I was so happy, so happy. And then I went to the DC site, and I was like, eh.
See, and that's the problem I have with this. That's why I'm glad we have you here, Paul. That's the problem I have with that is I'm approaching these, even though I'm a comic book fan and I am DC, I have enjoyed the Marvel films, but I'm approaching this as just – a film person, and I don't care if it's Marvel, I don't care if it's DC, I just want them to be good. Yeah. And Masper, I just am concerned that, one, the average movie audience is going to get tired of seeing comic book films, no matter how good they are, but two, I think that it just... You know, I think they might drop in quality or the expectations are going to be so high that they're going to be disappointed. Andrew, at all, have you followed any at all?
It is my job to be following things like that. So, of course I have. Of course I have. And
being the indie film guy, too, I didn't know how closely you were. But what do you think? I mean, do you think it's going to be too much comic book films? I mean, I miss some mystery myself.
No, they're, you know, you got to remember, man, you're not the audience, you're not the age group that they're aiming at with these things, dude. They're, you know, they're looking at the age group that buys video games and toys, not to generalize, but that's kind of who they're really kind of jumping on. And they want a generation that has been growing up with this stuff to, you know, to continue to buy their cereal and all that other stuff. So, I mean, it's in their best interest to not just keep cranking out the sequels to this stuff, but actually, you know, do stuff they haven't heard of. And, you know, the success of Guardians of the Galaxy is proof positive that they will watch anything that Marvel puts out as long as it doesn't get, like, too stagnant or whatever. So,
right.
If I can, like, specify, I thought Black Panther was really cool. I was like, wow, we're going to have a black superhero finally. Mm-hmm. That's great, you know? But female next, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I was intrigued by their choices. What excited me more than the Infinity Wars and the sequels to the already established characters is like you, the Black Panther and the Captain Marvel, who's going to be woman. You know, those two films got me excited. I was like, okay, they're actually branching out, you know.
Yeah, and as far as the mystery thing is concerned, what this does really is keep the rumor mill at bay. They can start handing out little pieces and little images and stuff, and they can maintain control of it. So the fans aren't speculating and talking about, you know, what's next? Oh, I heard this, and this website comes up and goes, oh, the next Marvel movie is going to be this. Now you have this graphic with all the stuff you're going to expect for the next, like, you know, 6-7 years, and they maintain all the control of that, and therefore, you know, I mean, some of the surprise is gone, but also, they know they're in the internet age. They know they're in Twitter age.
Yeah.
Misinformation can get out so quickly, and it can really kind of derail what they're trying to do.
That's a good point. I guess I didn't quite look at it like that, though. I personally, I just hope they don't do like Amazing Spider-Man 2 did and show pretty much the entire movie before it was released. You know, all these exclusive clips they have coming out. But Scott, what about you? Do you think too much comic book films, or were you excited or interested when they announced it?
People will get burnt out on comic book films eventually. They will. And it will disappear probably for about 4 or 5 years, and then they're going to come back again because they're actually with us forever, I think. It's going to be like the same thing that we deal with horror films. If Saw 6 didn't do well, they said, well, horror films are done. No, they're never done. They just kind of reboot, regroup, and say, well, what are we doing now? And I think Andrew is dead on. When we grew up, we used to get, like, magazines and stuff, and that used to be how we'd find out stuff out, and we'd hear, like, oh, there's going to be a story on the TV about the new Star Wars movie or Star Trek film or whatever this last Starfighter thing is, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And that was, like, how we knew what was going to happen on this is the internet age. This we've now got people that are in their 20s who have never known anything different. Actually, some are in their 30s, I imagine, Jews, who have really never known anything different other than this. A new image just got released from the upcoming such-and-such film, and that's a newsworthy event, and which I've always maintained is not a newsworthy event.
How about the teaser to the teaser?
Oh, that's freaking... that is just... This really gives me, you know, it's... I become like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino, but without the racism... where I'm just like, this is a stupid thing. I get off my lawn.
Thank you. That's you know? Me. That's me. I guess that's me.
And I get this thing where they just they keep on doing these stupid gimmicks that I just think are such pandering consumerism. But Andrew's right. They're there for the long game. They are playing the long game, and it's not easy to play the long game. Marvel can play the long game better than anybody else out there because they've proven it.
Right.
A proof of somebody who can't play the long game is what you were saying with Spider-Man, where they decided that they were going to do an entire universe all around Spider-Man, which some of us thought was exciting, but some of us thought, really? an entire universe around Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And a movie every year, and And, of course, if for those of us who really didn't think the first Amazing Spider-Man with Garfield there was that good, it was like, eh. And sure enough, Part 2 really didn't do bad. Everybody says it did bad. Oh, it's not that it didn't do bad. It didn't make its target, and its target was $1 billion globally. It didn't make $1 billion. It made like $600 or $700 million, and that's why they're freaking out and trying to scrap the whole idea and rethink it. Marvel plays the long game very well, and what Andrew said is great. Guardians of the Galaxy proved that as long as they do it fresh, people will go see anything. That was the one where I was sure, like, geez, that is a really obscure comic book, even for someone like me who has read a lot of comic books. Will people still go see it when it's not a big name? Yes, they will, because it was done really well. So honestly, when they announced these names, I'm like, yeah, whatever, just bring it on.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, anything. You could do that thing about Willie Lumpkin. I'll see it.
I don't know. I guess I'm old like that. Tony, how about your final thoughts with this? I mean, I know you're the younger of the group here, and I'm sure you were excited with the Marvel, but would you say that they do get a little bit too much with the pre-hype on some of these films? Or are you welcoming every minute of a new clip from the film?
Like in terms of if they release some of the footages like too soon?
Yeah, like they're doing right now with Ultron, and then they already did a teaser, and though it's just Thanos with the glove, they already did a teaser for Infinity Wars, which isn't for 3.5 freaking years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, and oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just saying, what do you think? Because, I mean, you and your friends, a lot, you're a little bit different generation, so I'd love to get a different perspective on this and not just be the crotchety old guy on the bench.
Where do the kids see in these days?
Well, of course, you know me. You know me, I really enjoy the Marvel films. But, you know, when it comes to, like, announcing all of Phase 3, I personally do think they announced that, like, maybe a year too soon. Like, I think maybe after Avengers Age of Ultron is, you know, already released and everyone's already seen it, I think after that, that's when they should have announced Phase 3, because it would have been better that way. I mean, we're already hyped up about Avengers Age of Ultron. You know, the trailer looks so badass, I can't control myself for that trailer. I've seen it like 30 times. I've seen it 30 times now. I'm not over-exaggerating when I say that. So, like, you know, it's 7 more months until Avengers Age of Ultron, and yet they announce all of these movies, which we're not going to see until 2016, 2017, right, 2018. And then, of course, just when we're anticipating for Part 2, they expect us to get all hyped for a two-part Avengers 3, which does not come out until 2018 with the first part, and 2019 with the second part. Like, holy crap. Like, I'm excited for all these movies. You know, I can't wait to see Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther, because, you know,
I'm so looking forward to the Black Panther and the and the Captain Marvel films, personally. And on the other side, the Wonder Woman film from DC. I'm looking really forward to see what they do with that.
Well, you want to know the first thought that I had, guys? And I'm just going to go ahead and admit this on the Spoiler Room podcast, because I didn't say it elsewhere. But I'm looking at this schedule and stuff, and you know which actors are in place and everything. My first thought I had was, what if one of these dudes dies? You know, one of the actors.
Andrew,
I got all these plans that extend, you know, like all these years. I'm like, what if one dies?
It happens.
What were you going to say, Tony?
Oh, no, I was going to agree with what Andrew said. But it's all like, what would happen?
I'm sorry, that was just my immediate thought I had when I saw it.
Well, you can never plan for the future. I mean, it's like that lady from The Matrix that died between parts. When they were shooting
1 and 2, it was 1 and 2. That's what it was. Yeah, it was between 1 and 2. She died. His name Dumbledore passed away. They planned 8 films, and the guy who played Dumbledore passed away. I mean, yeah, you do get that. What gets me though is, and we'll cut off on this and we'll go to horror films. But this was just such big news. I figured we had to talk a little bit about it.
You know the reason they did it now, though. I mean, because I do think it's too soon, like Tony said and everything. But you know the reason they did it now is that It's because DC announced their slate through 2020. Yeah. And now suddenly, instead of this company we have doing all these exciting things, yeah, we got a company doing exciting things, but it's also kind of become a pissing contest, you know?
Yeah. Marvel's always trying to find a way to one-up DC. If DC announces one thing, Marvel's going to be like, no, fuck you, DC.
East Coast, West Coast, right?
Yeah, exactly. You see it all over. You see it all over the internet right now.
What set you claiming, DC?
AWA, Avengers with an Attitude.
I'm DC, man. I'm DC. See, I'm DC. How would you do that? I'm DC. There you go.
Watch which neighborhood you throw up that DC sign.
Yeah, right. But it is pretty crazy, though, how not only is a competition between the studios, Marvel and DC, but it's a competition with the fan base. Like, I'm always seeing on Facebook and all other sites how people are doing that bullshit Marvel versus DC. Like, why can't we just enjoy both sides equally?
Thank you, Tony. Thank you. That was my main concern with this, is you have such this rabid fanboy base between the two that, and people aren't even giving DC a chance. I know they don't have the strongest track record, but my concern is you're going to have all these Marvel fanboys who won't go see the DC film if it doesn't look like, oh my God, orgasmic good, when it could be a decent film, but it won't get the box office pull just because you've got that fan base going, well, no, I'm not going to see that because it's DC. You know,
well, it's just remember, man, it wasn't that long ago we had Dolph Lundgren's Punisher, and that's all we got.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's still the best Punisher movie, though.
Don't forget. look at Marvel. They weren't always perfect either. I mean, some of their weaker films are like Daredevil, but look where they got to now.
Shipper War from Wheel of Film, I'm going to drop a name. She's a big DC person, and she's trying to remind everybody who's doing all this, well, Marvel's great, Marvel's spectacular. Oh, my God, I want to go to bed with Marvel, that Marvel's filed for bankruptcy twice. DC has survived, even with their supposed quote-unquote lesser films, has survived a lot longer than Marvel and has been successful.
I will say right now, my favorite of any Marvel or DC movie, live action or otherwise, is the 2009 animated Wonder Woman. I think it's still the greatest thing that any of them have put out. That movie rules. So good.
The ones I've tended to like is I've tended to really love what DC does with TV, and I love their animated films, and for the theatrical films, I've loved Marvel more. I'm hoping that can change. I'm hoping I can love them both equally, but Man of Steel was just too much of a bummer for me.
So before we move this into more of a comic book podcast, sorry, folks, but sorry. It was just...
We're all nerds.
We are all nerds. It is movie... related, we are a movie podcast, and by God, that was probably the biggest news to be dropped in a while outside of DC's lineup. And DC's lineup was just starting to get news traction, and that's why Marvel pulled this plug now. But the one final thought I was going to say is, where's their hype for Ant-Man? Ant-Man?
I
know everyone's all like forgetting about. Everyone's like even Ant-Man in the third wheel. They're all like, oh yeah, Avengers. Oh yeah, Captain America 3. And they're like, Ant-Man. Wait, who?
It's had not the best publicity with the directors changing and all that.
So I am kind of disappointed they didn't announce another Hulk movie. Like, yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, that right there shows you, you know, makes me concerned about the plight of some of these comic book films that they have scheduled out. So, but that's comic book films. We could probably do a whole full spoiler room, which we probably will in the near future on comic book films. But let's get done with that now and move on to our favorite subject for this favorite time of season, Halloween-themed films. Now, I asked all these fine gentlemen to bring with them at least one favorite Halloween or horror film that they watch during Halloween, if nothing else. And tonight we're going to start off with the fresh meat in the room. Paul?
Yep.
What would you say is one of your favorite Halloween movies?
I have two movies, actually. One is an anthology. The other one is the movie that scared me completely as a child. The one that scared me completely as a child has to do with something that my mother did. My sister and I, we had HBO, and we cheated, and we watched the Exorcist on HBO. Oh. My mom was watching us, and she was smart. She waited until that flying bedroom scene happened, and then she made us go to bed. I slept on the floor that night because of that. It was scared me completely. But that was the last movie that I would say really ever scared me, and that's one of my favorites. But for Halloween-related movies, it's the anthology Trick or Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat, yes.
Great movie.
Oh, I love that movie. The anthology.
That is a fantastic pick. Let's talk about first The Exorcist, the classic, and then we can talk about Trick or Treat. Guys, The Exorcist, me personally, it is one of those scariest films I've still watched. Creepy, just fantastic performance by a young actress. Andrew, what would you say your impressions on The Exorcist?
Oh man, I had the pleasure of introducing a theatrical screening of The Exorcist a couple of weeks ago, and
that's right, you did.
Yeah, and it was like, what the hell do you say? You know, I mean, it's like you could go any way with it because there's that great book Hollywood Hex about the supposed curse of The Exorcist, and you know, there's all that crazy stuff about you could talk about the 70s and the era of the auteur and all of that, or you could talk about Blatty versus Friedkin. And I just decided to tell everybody that it was going to scare the crap out of them and talk about, you know, how people would faint and run out of the doors and all the cool stories my dad told me about when it was out. But really and truly, man, The Exorcist is probably going to go down in history as the scariest movie ever made. I mean, that's... You know, it's always going to be subjective, but that's the legacy of Exorcist. I think that's why no one's remade it.
Well, yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And also the fact of, and this goes back to our disturbing discussions, disturbing horror films, which we had last podcast, which you can check on the Special Mark Productions page. But sorry. that goes back there to where The Exorcist is a film I don't think, I mean, they've tried to do something similar, but no one's ever got it as right as The Exorcist did with just what they did, and I don't think they could make that film again with that same exact impact because of the culture of the movie-making culture and in general. I personally don't think they could make that type of film again, especially with such a young actress. She does. I mean, really,
yeah.
Tony, you've seen The Exorcist?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, what's your impression of it, dude?
It's definitely a creepy film. I remember the first time I saw the movie, it was like, I believe, 3 years ago. I think 3 years ago is the first time I saw it. It was on Netflix. My mom said, Tony, you should go watch The Exorcist. And I'm like, oh, are you crazy? I'm not going to watch that movie. and then she's all like, oh, come on, give it a chance. I heard it's a classic. I'm like, okay, fine. And then I watched the movie. And thanks to my mom, I couldn't sleep for a week.
No, that's for the old school.
Boy, everybody's parents were kind of cruel to them.
I was the opposite way when Exorcist came out because I loved The Exorcist. I saw it early. And I think I've told this story either on or off air when we were doing other podcasts, but I was going to a lot of private fundamentalist schools as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the kid that I wasn't the kid that gave people porn or anything, but I was the kid where they all the religious families, all the kids went to my house to watch the messed up horror films that people told them, don't see these movies because if you do, you're going to burn in hell. and the biggest, worst film for them to see, apparently, was The Exorcist, because it was a Lutheran evangelical school, Minnesota, Wisconsin Synod, and they have some issues with the Catholic Church. I don't even think it was mostly the Satan film. I think it was they have issues about the Catholics being the good guys. They hold a grudge. But... and so I had, you know, all, like, the kids of, like, the of course, they were the worst behaved kids, but they were like the kids of the, you know, the elders of the church, the pastor, the assistant, the deacon or whatever they have. And they are all over there. And I said, now don't tell anybody that you've seen this over here because I'm going to get my ass kicked, okay? So I like show them, you know, Hellraiser. I show them The Exorcist and they freaked. They said, and I told them, says, you know, it's not a scare a minute movie. It's a very dramatic film. It's really good. And they saw it, they went, wow, that was amazing. And wouldn't you know it, freaking pastor's kid first thing in the morning over pancakes. Thanks for letting us watch The Exorcist. Fuck you. Loose lips, man. Loose lips.
But I mean, considering the fact this is a 1970s film, it's impressive what they had to go through to make this movie, because you didn't have computers back then, so they really had to go like full on practical with The Exorcist.
Oh yeah,
so,
yeah,
it was, especially when they spew out that green stuff, like
locker in there.
I heard they use guacamole to spew out that green stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's guacamole, and also I think they did something with the when it burns the name into her belly when she's got I think it's the words or whatever, the stuff going on in her belly, the stuff they did for that. Yeah, they did some really cool special effects, all practical. And that's why it's another movie that stands the test of time, because I think practical effects help age a film a hell of a lot better, for the most part, good practical effects, than CGI ever will. So Exorcist was great. And then Trick or Treat. I just reviewed this on WeLiveFilm.com. I did a review with this. I love this movie, and I think it's underrated quite a bit. Scott, what would you say?
It's great. People who ever wanted to know like the spoilers of what my answer is eventually going to be could have checked out a series that I was just telling Paul about earlier, but I wrote about the top five Halloween-themed movies ever made that I wrote a couple years ago. And Trick or Treat was not number one, but it was in the top five. It's a great movie that Warner Brothers didn't know what to do with. They saw the movie. They didn't like it. They thought no one's going to want to see an anthology, so they buried it. They held it from release for like a couple years. Finally, begrudgingly, after it started winning festival awards, they threw it out on video only, and it started to gain a following, thank God. It's a great movie. It's an amazing film that manages to tell an anthology format by balancing things that are happening simultaneously on Halloween night. It tries to capture virtually every kind of trope that it can, and it just does a wonderful job at it. It's just a complete winner from beginning to end. I love that movie. A good pick.
Yeah. Paul, what did you like about Trick or Treat? Did you have a favorite part in it?
Actually, I love that character, the Sam character, the little kid with the bag over his head. And then just when he's like, he just looks, reminds me of like a child going up to you and knocking on your door, and you'd open it up and it'd be like, do I give him candy or not? Do I run?
I likened him to, I don't know if any of you probably ever played it or even seen the commercials, but there's a game called Little Big Planet, and there's a Sackman is your main character, and he looks such like that. It's uncanny. It really is. Andrew, what are your thoughts on Trick or Treat?
Oh, I thought Gene Simmons was awesome in it, and Mark Price from Family Ties. I was like, wow,
I didn't get a part of the other one. I go there, Andrew. That's why I Skippy.
That's an old
Bernie
people
Youngin,
joke.
There was a film in 1987 called
Trick or Treat. The Rock and
Roll. That wasn't fair.
It was
or
treat. It was Trick or Treat. This one's Trick or Treat.
Yeah, no, that wasn't fair, dude. I remember really, really being anxious to see it, and it was going to be a big Universal release, if I'm not mistaken, and there were toys out and everything, and then nothing. And then it just, you know, it did, because it deserves to be one of those movies that everyone watches on Halloween, and I really hated that it didn't get its due, because it's obscure, I think, and it's not fair, because it should have been ultimate, because it is ultimate. It's great. The segment with the little kids in the school bus.
Oh yeah,
it's one of the scariest things ever, dude. That is like that's a gut punch. That's not even like horror comedy. That is truly frightening stuff. And it's scarier after you've seen it once, because you know what's going to happen, and it makes it worse. Like, oh, God.
Tony, what about you? Trick or Treat?
Honestly, I haven't seen Trick or Treat.
Really? Okay, put it on your list, man, because it's like...
Make sure you get the right one.
Yeah, make sure you get the right one.
They're both good, yeah. I'm not being fair.
Okay, my friends have been telling me all the time, and I think it's even instantly from Netflix.
Yeah,
so maybe, maybe tomorrow on Halloween, maybe after I'm done passing County to trick-or-treaters, maybe I'll watch Trick or Treat afterwards.
Actually, even better if you play it while you're handing out the candy and leave the windows open so they can see what you're watching. You'll get a lot more people to your window that way. No.
Just to scare the little kitties, right?
Yeah. I love Trick or Treat. I mean, growing up in 80s and that 90s, you had some anthology films. You had the Creepshow films, and this was the first film that I had seen in a long time that made it feel like, you know, a Creepshow type film. They really captured the spirit of that, and at the same time, they really wrote a solid story. I mean, they intertwine these stories to where it's an anthology story movie, but the stories are intertwined. They cross over either minor or majorly, and I just love that that Sam wasn't the only link to it. And there's some actually big-name stars, at least for the time it came out. There were some big names in it, too. So definitely great choices there, Paul. I definitely recommend both those to everyone, especially Trick or Treat. That is like the epitome of a Halloween film outside of John Carpenter's Halloween that you want to watch on Halloween because
we should start a movement to make it like the Christmas Story but for Halloween, you know, just get everybody to...
It is like the Christmas Story for the Halloween, or should be anyway. So great picks there. Andrew, how about you, sir? Good Halloween films or horror films in general that you watch during Halloween. What one or two yours?
My number one Halloween movie to watch on Halloween, Night of the Demons, 1988, man.
I knew it.
I knew it was going to be Night of the Demons.
I mean, what? How could it not, dude? You guys know. You know, Linnea Quigley is my pal, and I worshipped her when I was a kid. And, man, we saw it was like Night of the Demons came out, and it was me and one other kid that barely spoke English that had gone to see it over the week, and I had no one to talk to about it. And this guy's name was Jesse Jaramillo. And can I just tell you what Jesse Jaramillo's review of Night of the Demons was? It's still in my head. I still remember it because I was like, finally, there's a kid that I could talk to with horror movies about, because there was a kid named Rasheen Hannibal that had seen the original Nightmare on Elm Street when it was new. And we got to talk about it. And Jesse Jaramillo goes, "You seen Night of the Demons?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "That lady didn't have no hairy pussy." That was his review.
Wow.
He's talking about Renee Quigley's, you know, bottomless scene that
just came out of nowhere.
That was his review. And I'm like, I was crushed. I was just, you know.
That's what he focused on.
Yeah. I saw one of the greatest, but Night of the Demons takes place on Halloween night, so it is a definite Halloween. There's nothing I could say right now that's going to make Scott listen to me.
Scott. Thinking about how you've kind of taken reviews like that and your love of films like this, and you've parlayed that into Gonzerific. So.
Yeah. But really, man, it's such a great film that's got great music, but it takes place on Halloween night, and it's got like the old man with the apple, you know, and oh god, I've seen it, but I watch it not just on Halloween, but all year long. But it's got kids in costumes. It's got monsters. You know, it's got the group of people. It's got the really smart black guy that wants to leave. It's got, like, you know, my grandmama told me about this shit. And, you know, Steve Johnson, great special effects there. And, you know, Amelia Kincaid. It's just, what a great group of – it does – so many movies try to do what it does.
Yeah.
And it just nailed, and it's also really scary. Like, it's funny, it's sexy, it's scary, great makeup. I don't know,
it's
man.
It's creepy.
It is my, yeah, some people have, like, It's a Wonderful Life. But for me, Night of the Demons, there's a kind of a big drop-off when it comes to Halloween movies after that, just because it is so everything, you know, to me.
No, that's a fantastic pick. I really enjoyed, especially the makeup effects for that, for the time it came out. I thought the special effects in it actually worked really well.
It gets really scary. It does, and so quotable. I've stolen many lines from that movie for my own movies, and shots. There's a shot in Blood Witch that is the exact, you know, when Linnea's bent over in the store and her underwear is hanging out.
Yeah,
I completely stole that shot in my movie Blood Witch.
That's what I'm saying.
You didn't steal it. You were paying homage to it.
My director credit appears on the butt in my movies. That's how, you know.
You're paying tribute to it. You're paying tribute to it.
Definitely. Yeah, I was. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
And Scott, I'm sorry. You can listen back to it to hear all the things I said after I said Jesse's review. And I'll never forget it. What a review. You know, my entire career as a journalist, I've just been trying to reach that zenith that Jesse reached with, you know, one line. My 800-word reviews don't...
It says so much.
You know, it's like those Twitter reviews. You know, I mean, I just babble naturally, which obviously you all know by now.
Really?
And, yeah, believe it or not. And then you see, like, these people who, like... are big from their 140 character Twitter reviews. Like, no, you can't sum it up in 140 characters. Actually, that was a pretty good summation.
I was like, don't you wish though that that guy was reviewing movies on Twitter now? Like,
he might be.
Wouldn't that be spectacular?
Just one sentence reviews. Those would be no.
Like, what would Jesse's review of a Killer Joe? What would his review be?
Or the Night of the Demons remake be?
Yeah.
Yeah, Killer Joe. Here's my estimation of Jesse's review. You guys want me to do this?
Yeah, do it. Go.
That lady knows suck that chicken bone. Jesse does it again.
I love it when you show up to these things, Andrew.
Oh, got the best story.
Well, I can't do this stuff on my show. I can't say that stuff on my show. I have to show up at pitch meetings every morning. They're gonna know.
Tony, have you seen Night of the Demons, the original?
No, I haven't.
No.
What year was it from?
88.
1988. They did do a. Don't confuse it with the remake that they came out with.
In 2009.
2000, yeah, nine. Early 2000s.
I do have a like a second pick.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I know I probably picked somebody's or something like that, so I want to make sure I mention a made-for-TV film called The Midnight Hour. Anybody seen that?
I've heard of it.
Sherry Belafonte.
I've heard of it. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but yeah, because
I thought I'd drop one that maybe you guys can look up since everybody knows Night of the Demons. Midnight Hour.
Midnight Hour. Nice.
Yeah, 1985. There may be a couple movies called that, but
that was Sherry Belafonte, right?
Yes, it is. Sherry Belafonte.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, if you guys ever want to recommend a horror movie I probably haven't seen that you all have, feel free to recommend me so I can add on my much watch list.
Night of the Demons.
Night of the Demons.
Great.
So far I have Night of the Demons and Trick or Treat in my must-see.
There you go.
You're going to have a great Halloween, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have a great Halloween.
Sorry, I derailed what you were saying, Mark, about...
No, it's okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. LeVar Burton was in that, as well as Peter DeLuise, Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Wow. I forgot how many people were...
You don't have to mention Peter DeLuise.
the Midnight Hour, though. Kevin McCarthy was in it. Wow. Dick Van Patten. How can you pass it up when it's Dick Van Patten?
I could imagine Peter DeLuise watching this. And he's like, no, Scott. They should mention me. You're wrong, Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Like, oh, what's he going to do? Solar baby me to death?
How about... I just now got that name, Dick Van Patten, Patten Van Dick.
No. Wow.
Just got that. Wow, what a genius.
He is.
Peter O'Toole. I'm sorry.
That's
Halloween.
Okay.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everyone. And great picks. I definitely got to throw Midnight Hour on the list. I saw all those people in it that... I remember when it came out, I just never have seen it, but I remember because they had such big names on it.
Yeah, for a movie that Skippy
when I was a kid,
in, it's pretty...
Yeah.
The fame does not exist everywhere.
So let's go to Tony then. Tony, how about you, sir? One of your, or a couple of yours, favorite Halloween films or films you watched during Halloween?
Well, a couple of my favorite horror Halloweenish movies... one of them is 1982 Poltergeist. I really love that movie. And for it being a PG-rated family horror film and for it having those scary images for PG rating, which surprised me even had their rating, I thought it was a very well-done film. But the film I do want to mention that you guys brought up earlier is the original Nightmare on Elm Street. That one, for me not being like the biggest fan of the horror genre, that one's like one of my favorite horror movies of all time. I love the imagery. I loved Robert Englund, who played Freddy Krueger. You know, just the whole imagery. And then one, two, Freddy's coming for you. The third thing about that movie was it was very terrifying. And, you know, it just had some of the creepiest imageries I've ever seen. And that movie as a whole, wow, it's just really great. Like, it scares you, but you could have fun with it while being scared at the same time. So I love that movie a lot.
And it was actually a low-budget horror film when it came out, if I remember correctly. I mean, Wes Craven and that, I mean, if you look at it, that really didn't have a huge budget at the time it came out at all. Paul, what about you? What's your feelings on a Nightmare on Elm Street? Classic, to be sure.
By the way, thank you, Paul. I know you said you wanted someone to mention that, so you're welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Only because I want to mention Johnny Depp.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. The thing that I remember about the movie, though, isn't Johnny Depp, but the fact that, you know, when Freddy Krueger would draw his claws against like metal pipes and stuff, that sound, it's just like, you know, that always like, ooh, and it made you feel something inside, and that to me was scary, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then the sparks, if I remember correctly, our horror historians here could probably correct me, but the way they did the sparks is they hooked up a car battery to the gloves.
Oh.
The glove, and so when he dragged it along the pipes, it made sparks. And that's how they made the sparks, is they took a car battery and ran voltage through the blade.
He didn't get electrocuted at all.
Guess not. Not sure if he's
almost. Looks like somebody else. You almost played him in part two. Peter Deloise.
Andrew, your thoughts on Nightmare on Elm Street, the classic?
Oh man, Freddy's my favorite. You know, he's the best. I think that the genius legacy of a Nightmare on Elm Street series, if I could say, because I. They got children to dress like a child molester for Halloween. You know what I'm saying? Like I dressed as him for several years in a row. I was making my own Freddy glove, and I was like 9. You know what I'm saying?
A lot of kids. Yeah, a lot of kids were. I mean, what? I know I did.
What? Why has it taken me 30 years to realize that?
It's because in a lot of the movies they sort of downplay that aspect of him, but you know, a lot of people didn't like Freddy vs. Jason, but in all reality, the Freddy vs. Jason intro where it shows Freddy licking pictures of kids and sticking them in his scrapbook, that was the nastiest Freddy Krueger has ever been portrayed in one of those movies. Because that's totally what he was.
They didn't downplay it. Say what you will about the remake, they didn't downplay it.
Oh no, if they hadn't made him look like the Velveteen Rabbit, it would have been. You know, I don't hate that movie at all, and in fact, my heart sort of raced when they had the trailer and they showed Freddy before he was burned. Because I really want a prequel bad. I really do. I don't care how crappy it is.
England. She wanted one bad for a while too.
Yeah, I mean it just, and you know, if you've seen, here we go. If you've seen Freddy's Nightmares, the first episode directed by Tobe Hooper, it gives probably the most of probably closest we'll get.
Yeah, and it was terrifying. I was at a sleepover with those same fundamentalist kids. And we watched the premiere episode of that, and we didn't want to sleep that night.
It's surprisingly disturbing for an episode of a television show.
Definitely. Tony, have you seen any of Freddy's Nightmares or just the Nightmare on Elm Street series?
I've just only seen the third one, which I didn't care too much for, and just the first one. So just the first and the third one I've seen.
Oh, you've got to see the rest of the Freddy's films, definitely. But there was the TV show for a short amount of time called Freddy's Nightmares, which is like a creep show as well, and all these other, and you know, Twilight Zone ish type of movies came out, but I will say it was probably the most disturbing. But what was great too is what I remember is they had, I believe it was Robert Englund doing the hosting of it. He'd do an intro or whatnot, but there was also a commercial, which I totally admit I called the phone number because this is back before the internet and you had any web pages or anything, and they had a Freddy's Nightmares number you could call, and there'd be a different nightmare story every week, but it was like $5 a minute.
It was like a 1-900 number, right?
Yeah, it was a 1-900 number, and it was like a 4-minute...
And children were calling it. Wouldn't it have been great if children had called it, and it's just instead of a story, Freddy's just like, I want to lick you, bitch. What are you wearing?
Or Freddy's reading a bedtime story to someone, he's like, and they all lived happily ever after. Kingdom come for you.
This made him sound like the announcer for a metal band concert. Man. You know, like, Cubs produced by Cellar Door coming to the Omni Thursday.
The problem with that show, though, was that Freddy didn't, he wasn't the scary Freddy. He was like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark kind of. Like, funny. You know?
Well,
like,
he's like the Bugs Bunny of the horror genre. You know, but child molester. So.
Everybody forgets that origin. You know, it's like, well, that's like the Bruce Campbell character that you get in Army of Darkness is completely different than what you had in the first Evil Dead. You know, but everybody knows Ash as that character mostly from, you know, Army of Darkness. That's what the main populace knows him as, that more comical character. Freddy's the same way. I mean, in those first two films, he was pretty doggone scary, but then you get into Dream Warriors, which I love Dream Warriors personally, but I can see where people wouldn't like it because that is where Freddy really changed into more of a character, and pretty soon you're watching it not for the scares, but just for Robert Englund as Freddy. You're just watching.
He was the horror version of an action movie icon of the 80s, where he would kill people and have a one-liner before he killed people.
But you know, the people that he killed were generally nice. They were decent people. They weren't like the sex-crazed, pot-smoking assholes that Jason killed or something. And that just makes it worse. We're cheering for this guy to kill okay people with mental problems. And he molested children.
That's the thing, is you're laughing with him and you want to see what he comes up with of how to kill someone. I mean,
and everybody's mad in the remake where they made him all gross and they're like, oh no, he was off-putting, like, oh god.
He's a child molester.
Yes, you guys.
No, I would just watch this movie again, which I don't know. I must have seen this movie like by 20, 30 times by now. Mm-hmm. And I love every minute of it. Like right from the opening where he's building the glove and you hear that great soundtrack sting, brrr, and then you see, you know, and then you see, you know, Tina right there. I mean, perfect. But, you know, I'm still getting new stuff out of it, even though I've seen the movie dozens of times. I'm still getting something new out of it every time I see it. And the last time I saw it, what was so intriguing was that it's like, yeah, I get this whole power of the dream thing, because when you get down to it, we've all given Freddy so much credit because he manipulates our dreamscapes and everything like that and creates this world. But we're not in his dreams. He's in ours. The power really is ours. It's just the initial shock of him, and that's why some people can take control of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that, just like those whole elements, you know, and there's always, and next time I see it, I'll probably get something else out of it.
You know what I got out of it without watching it was I rewatched Labyrinth and realized the endings to those movies are basically identical.
Oh my god, they are. Wow. Okay, my mind's just blown.
Dance, magic dance! Ah!
The interesting thing about between the remake Nightmare on Elm Street and the original is that Jackie Earl Haley, who is Freddy Krueger in the remake, actually auditioned to do Johnny Depp's part in the original film, but, you know, Johnny Depp took it instead, so I guess later on, that's why he just decided to try again and got the part. That's why we're on IMDb.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a nice bit of trivia.
Yeah, I found that interesting when I read that. You're welcome, everyone. Nice. Those watching, you're welcome.
And Paul, any last thoughts on Nightmare? We move on.
Well, since we were talking about Tina, one of my other favorite scenes was the body bag and watching it just slide across the floor the first time. That was a beautiful image.
Yeah. Oh, I actually love that part where Johnny Depp sinks in his bed and you see all that blood splatter out of his head.
Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah. It's all like they're like, okay, Quentin Tarantino, you're going to direct this one scene where he sinks in his bed and blood splatters. Perfect. I will do it.
Yeah, it's interesting how he had no internal organs, just a bunch of
blood.
It's like, hey, Kool-Aid, oh yeah.
Oh great, now I just pick Kool-Aid man.
Oh yeah.
all this time he thought it was cherry Kool-Aid that filled the Kool-Aid man. No, it was the blood of the children he killed.
And Johnny Depp.
And Johnny Depp.
Blood of children inside the Kool-Aid. Mark, this is the best podcast ever.
The Freddy Kool-Aid man is the one who showed up in Jonestown.
Yeah.
Oh, real life murder.
Yeah.
It's all like, are we talking movies or are we being comedians?
Well, you get a little both here. We
this
get a little bit of
me
a
ever, this
spoiler
is
room
me all day.
You watch the spoiler room, people. That goes on.
This is what goes on in the spoiler room. Excellent choices there, Tony. Definitely Nightmare on Elm Street, classic, and Johnny Depp is showing you that many of your big actors out there before you poo-poo on independent horror films got their start in independent horror films. So just remember that.
And he honestly didn't do bad considering that was actually his first movie.
Mm-hmm. He came back showed up again in Freddy's Dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came back in Freddy's Dead. So that one where they cued you exactly when to put the 3D glasses on in a very not so subtle way.
He didn't say it was a good movie. I just said he was in it.
I gotta share real quick my Freddy's Dead story. My grandparents took me to see it, actually. I told them I really wanted to see it, and so my grandfather and grandma went with me to see it. And we had our 3D glasses on, and I thought the 3D was so cool, though it was cheesy, but I just had to chuckle when they said, oh, you're in the dream world now. You got to put these glasses on so you can see what Freddy's world really looks like. And when they put it on, everybody in the theater put on their glasses. We were all just little sheep. It was just the cheesiest way to do the 3D. It's like, really? You couldn't come up with a better cue outside of, put your 3D glasses on now. A low point in the Freddy films, along with the power glove. But anyway, Tony, you need to see the other Freddy films, definitely. Actually, New Nightmare, I would recommend. If you want to see another Freddy film that's kind of creepy and scary like the first one.
Actually, if you've seen 1 and 3, 7, 3 and 1 are all directly linked together.
I would probably watch the other films, honestly, just because I love the character Freddy Krueger himself so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, but I would say the next one, if you're really looking for one for Halloween, New Nightmare would probably be the next step if you've seen 1 and 3, because New Nightmare was actually really decent. I like the story.
And that's where I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's the one where the original actors come back, right?
Yeah, it's very meta. It's actually Wes Craven testing his whole meta thing like he did with Scream in that.
And getting back at Labyrinth by doing some M.C. Escher stuff.
Yes.
Okay. I'll add that to definitely.
Yeah, New Nightmare. You can miss the other Dream films if you want, but those are fun just because if you like Freddy, it's Freddy at his high comedic point in some of those films. And you knew the series hit a low when you've got Tom Arnold and Roseanne Barr showing up. So, all right, and Mr. Scott Davis, let's get to you, sir. Halloween film.
This will probably be a pretty quick one because my pick is Night of the Demons.
Well, I have a backup one. I have another one. You know, I had about five, but
That's okay. No, it's fine. I did a top five a few years back. And my top, you know, basically the top five were, I think, from beginning to end, were Halloween 3, American Nightmare, the Debbie Rochon film,
oh,
Trick
yeah.
or Treat, the original Halloween, and then Night of the Demons. Because Night of the Demons really is great, though. I do. That's the one I want to talk about, because it is everything that Andrew said. It is. I did, not only was it number one, it was also the focus of my Movieocrity Halloween special last year. It is a film where you watch this film, and I watch it not just on Halloween, but about two or three other times during the year, because more than any other film, it's not like a Christmas film where you, when you turn it on, and it's like, oh, yep, you turn it on during the season. I put this movie in, and it immediately becomes Halloween for me.
Sure.
Anytime. That mm-hmm. is how effective it is at just running through 90 minutes of spook show thrills. It is great. I love Trick or Treat too.
Night of the Demons.
I love Night of the Demons. It's a great movie. It's got sex, it's got violence, it's got outlandish characters, it's got a goth chick dancing to Baha's Stigmata Martyr. It's got
huge-breasted Asian woman having sex in a coffin.
Coffin. Yeah. They found an Asian woman with amazing jugs. It's got campiness. It's got some real pathos and stuff. I mean, they flipped so many characters on their end that in most of these films, like, for instance, you'd get, like, the black guy would be, like, the first one to get killed, because that was, like, the joke, almost. Like, it became such a stereotype. This one, he's a sensible one, but he's also a bit of a coward, but not in a comedic way. In a very realistic, shit's getting real thing, we need to sit down and pray. It's just, I love every second of this movie. Kevin Tenney just did an amazing film. It's got, you know, Linnea Quigley, Amelia Kincaid. It's got so many great people in it. I love every second of Night of the Demons. It's pretty much everything I love about the movies.
Did you enjoy the sex too?
Sorry? What?
Oh, I said, did you enjoy the sex too?
Did you enjoy the sex too?
Oh, I always enjoy the sex.
Hey, part two and three are pretty good too.
I haven't seen those in ages, but you know, I did recently pick up the Blu-ray of Part Two, so I'm gonna.
Yeah, three is really underrated because it's really kind of like a lot less comedic and a lot less campy. It's actually more of a serious movie, but two and three are cool. That's a good series.
Was Part Three done by Brian Trenchard Smith?
Yes, it was. Maybe that was two. Yeah, I think it was.
No,
two.
I think weren't the first two by Kevin Tenney? I don't know. Hold on a second.
I always try to go by memory. Now I have to know. Somebody check.
I'll check. I'm the one who's making people think. Hold on a second.
all of you have picked really good ones. Actually, you took almost of mine.
No, I've got one for the end.
That's okay.
Andrew, if you've got
Hold on a second. All before right. you do, real quick, before we go into it, just so we can set everybody's
I'm
mind.
I'm saying he did two. I think it was two.
Brian Trenchard Smith did part two, and a guy by the name of Jimmy Kaufman did part three.
Good old Kaufman.
Oh, yep. Kaufman.
Jimmy Kaufman, who also did a lot of TV.
Good old Jimmy, turn your head in Kaufman.
Looks like that guy did a lot of TV in the 90s. Well, mostly TV. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, remember that show, My Secret Identity? He was all over that.
There you go. But Night of the Demons, a favorite of many people's. Tony, definitely put that on your list.
I will.
Get the remake. Just didn't quite have the punch that the original did, I thought.
It was okay.
It was fun.
It had Tiffany Shepis in it, which was cool, but It was a different type of movie.
It was. It was a different type of movie. But Mr. Andrew Scheer, you said you had another one you'd like to talk about. What else?
Oh, no, I just, have? I had, you know, I just, yeah, I, please, whoever hasn't gone, please go.
I believe I'm the only one who hasn't gone, and most of you have talked about all the ones that I usually watch, and I've talked about it many times probably on this show, but I still go back to it, and it's because it affected me so much, and I have the 40th anniversary Blu-ray of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Man,
I actually just rewatched that like 3 weeks ago at midnight.
And I've praised that film and talked about it many times on our other shows here. You know, I like it. And what's funny is watching this, though, I always love people's impressions with this film. And I think I made the point before, but I love it because people talk about how disturbing and, you know, how gory and everything. This film actually is not that gory by any means.
It kind of leaves it to your imagination.
Yes, exactly. And that's why it's probably probably the favorite horror film of mine, because by the direction and camera angle and everything they did in that film, it made it seem like it was a lot worse than what it was, in all honesty. I mean, don't get me wrong, they've got graphic scenes. My favorite death scene, I mentioned it on the We Live Film podcast. I just called in tonight about they had their first podcast, and I mentioned my favorite scene is where the girl gets put on the meat hook, and then Leatherface chops up her boyfriend in front of her while she's on the meat hook.
Oh,
and what's interesting about that scene is there's really not a whole lot of gore or blood in it, but it's just the imagery. They show the hook. They show you him making a motion to put her on the hook. You hear the chainsaw. He's got the body laid out in front. You see him start cutting. But that's it. You really don't get a lot of what you would get today, you know, a lot of gore. But it hurts screaming, no soundtrack, just the sound of the chainsaw chopping up the guy. That whole scene is done so you break it down to what they actually show versus what your brain actually pieces together. Your imagination's a lot scarier than what that scene actually ends up being. I mean, am I off on that, or does it really play with your mind, that film?
It absolutely does. Do you guys remember the anybody here ancient enough to remember the 1980s comedy Summer School?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah,
we were talking about Ski School earlier. That's obscure.
Our friends in there that were a big horror fans, one of them was named Chainsaw, and their favorite, and they were known as being like these fiends of gore, and their favorite movie was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and they showed it in class because it's the great gore classic. But that's just, again, it was all about perception, even in the film. It's like, because, like, actually, when you watch it, it is just in your head. I've heard lots of different reasons for why it's not gorier, maybe partially because it was such an early film. I heard one explanation in one of Joe Russo's books where he was interviewing people that suggested that maybe they were aiming for a PG rating, which is kind of hilarious. I can't imagine that's true, but it was in the book. You know, it's like, what? We got an R for what? It does absolutely play with your heads. And I kind of, there are certain movies, in the 70s, I'd say Texas Chainsaw Massacre, in the 90s, Seven, where they suggest things, they don't show things, and it is what your brain works out is far scarier than what's actually on the screen. Now, a lot of times, filmmakers and people who are in the films have used that line as kind of a excuse to, shall we say, bitch out when it comes to just showing anything hardcore or going further or pushing the envelope. Well, no, we just talk about things because what your mind wakes out is better. And no, it's because you didn't have the balls to do it. These are films that had balls but also knew enough about human psychology to push that and say, we could invest in the Karo syrup and all that other stuff, but let's just use the sound. Let's not actually show the guy's head getting caved in, but let's just have the guy start to twitch after he gets hit the first time, because that's way freakier, just to see the guy, you know? Yeah.
Definitely. Paul, what about you? Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
The two things that really stand out for me about this movie is, one, it's the whole cannibalism thing. That's always been a taboo thing with, like, societies and stuff like that. So that in itself is kind of scary. But I think the thing that really makes this a great movie is the fact that Leatherface, you can't really ever see his face. And so it's just that faceless horror that you can get. And I think that's just the scary element of that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're never quite sure just how or why he wears the mask, at least in that first film. Later on in the sequels in that, you end up getting kind of the answer, unfortunately. But yeah, definitely that first one is what helps keep the mystery and fear. Andrew, anything to add to Texas Chainsaw?
That I love it. That I love it, man. It's, it's one of those where... you know, it's got that crazy great reputation, kind of like The Exorcist, you know. And mm-hmm. I actually, you know, I did enjoy the remake. A lot of people don't, but I actually really like it. But I
which one?
The 2003 one. The 2003 one.
The what? Okay, 2003 one. Yeah, it wasn't bad. No, I will not.
It's a because what a lot of people that hate on it don't think about is. Daniel Pearl, the cinematographer for the original movie, went on to become a professional, like an award-winning professional, and he found out they were remaking it, and he's like, can I shoot it? So it's like, you know, every independent filmmaker's dream is to be able to go back to their, you know, their rough edges and, you know, get to, like, show what they know and redo it. So I'm like, you know, there's this shot where the hitchhiker kills herself. Mm-hmm. I know we're talking about the original here. But this shot goes through her head and out the window. You know, I'm like, I know people don't like Michael Bay, but Michael Bay is gross. He's sick. If you've seen Bad Boys 2 or Pain and Gain, the guy's twisted. He's twisted. If Michael Bay ever makes a horror movie, God help us, it's going to be so messed up. But the original the original Texas Chainsaw is have you guys ever been in a Longhorn restaurant?
Yes.
Okay, I'll say
and
this.
And I can't look up.
The first time I got a gift certificate to a Longhorn Steakhouse, and we went in there, and I looked, and I was like, "Who designed this place? Robert A. Burns?" But a lot has been said about the original. What I do want to say is Marilyn Burns, obviously, an incredible talent, and she's one of the reasons why Texas Chainsaw is so believable, because her acting is just, you know what I'm saying? Like, all those people went nuts making the movie. That's real. That actually happened. And so, you know, when you watch it, you realize, like, those screams and stuff, that's, she's really, you know, and all that food's really rotten, and, you know, it's just... The more you know about the making of, the scarier it is, and you know. But yeah, I went into a Longhorn, and I was just like, and something I should mention: you guys seen the movie Tourist Trap?
Yes,
I have it.
Tourist Trap. The beginning of the Robert Burns, also the production designer on Texas Chainsaw, also did the production design on Tourist Trap, and the opening of Tourist Trap is screwed up. It's so scary.
It is.
There's this really long, drawn out murder scene where supernatural. You know, like all these like blunt implements just kill this guy. They shoot out at him, and man, what that? I mean, that was a tangent. I'm sorry. But
no, it's okay.
I just didn't think anybody would mention.
That was where they tried for an R and got a PG-13. We're like, can't win.
They really were going for PG. That's one of the part of Texas Chainsaw lore.
Yeah, which PG? Yeah, right. Okay, you guys. But for me, I mean, I totally agree with Marilyn's character, because I did that. That was my main focus. I did on a Horror Thursday. I did my review, and it really focused on her, because it was just after she passed away, and it is her performance that really seals the deal on that film to make you feel scared, because without what she did with her performance, I don't think that film is as scary as you think. But her fear and just the pure terror you see her go through, and how she comes across in that part, you feel for her. You feel as scared as she does for her, you know. And
the screaming will make you psychotic.
Yeah.
Watching that movie, all that screaming will make you...
The close-up shot on the eyes will make you scared.
Yeah. Yep,
I mean, that actually looked painful. It wasn't painful. She was just looking around, but it was so tense. It was just unbearable. I always quote it every time someone brings this movie up. I think I quoted it on one of the last shows that you brought it up, Mark, that Texas Chainsaw is the perfect horror film because it's the one film where ever since they made it, everybody and their brother has been trying to replicate that exact same feeling of dread and tension. And for 40 years, everybody, including the people who made the movie, no one has been able to pull it off.
Yeah.
No, as much as I don't like Blair Witch Project, I think it's the only one I wouldn't say it's comparable, but it achieved with its audience is comparable. Mm-hmm. But it's made by people that didn't know how to make movies so much, just like Texas Chainsaw. You know, the more you learn, the more diluted you get. But it doesn't have that safety net of the professional sheen. You know, it's really if it was submitted to a film festival right now, it probably would get rejected on, you know, lack of quality.
Mm. Yeah, and that is a shame. With that,
it wasn't shot on the red. Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it wasn't shot on the red, man. I love horror films. I love horror films done right. I have many others too. I bring up Texas Chainsaw all the time. I'm sure my listeners are tired of hearing me about it, but that was the film that affected me, got me into horror, and really, you know, moved on. I mean, there's all kinds of great horror you can watch this Halloween season. Let's not forget about the Easter themed horror film Critters, because it takes place during Easter. We have Pet Cemetery, which takes place during Thanksgiving. So, you know, Halloween isn't the only holiday that gets a lot of horror films. You know, there are others out there. A lot of great stuff. Everybody
or Gremlins on Christmas.
Gremlins. Christmas. Yeah, there you go. Gremlins. Gremlins is actually a good horror film. That was one of the first films you were talking about, PG-13. That was one of the reasons they came out with PG-13 is because they made Gremlins, and people were like, about that rating. Never mind the fact Howard the Duck was PG and you got to see duck boobs. But anyway.
Yeah. Or Jaws is rated PG, but they still show a few shots of arms being...
Yeah.
That was freaking intense. Like, I was like, what? How is this not rated R?
Well, I think, Tony, it was you that was bringing up Poltergeist before, if I'm not mistaken. And people just started freaking out. A few people started freaking out recently because the Poltergeist remake is going to be PG-13, and they're saying, "What? What?" I'm like, "Guys, the first one was PG."
It's not every movie is rated.
PG-13 rating was invented, but it was still PG. Guys, come on.
Poltergeist is a great. What I like about Poltergeist, it falls in line with like Silence of the Lambs, where it was widely accepted by a huge group of audience people, and you look at it, and it's a horror film, but yet people who might not like horror films really like those films, and that's what I like about some of those, especially Poltergeist.
Poltergeist from the director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There you go. It was from the director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and produced by Spielberg, right?
Yes.
A lot of people always say, and I will never believe this until I see documented proof, but a lot of people always say, well, you know, Spielberg really directed that. I'm like,
well, a lot of the cast say that the day Spielberg was on the set, he was in charge, and a lot of times that gets translated to, you know, he ghost directed.
And I don't think he did, though, because I can think you can see a lot of shots in that movie that are very much Toby Hooper.
Yeah, too many sweaty faces to be a Spielberg.
Yeah. Well, I also would put it back that the fact he may have helped give Toby pointers, maybe, in his timing and direction, but yeah, it is Toby's. It really is Toby's movie, even though he may have been in charge. It was still the direction of Toby Hooper. Yeah. My favorite scene, personally, in Poltergeist is not one of the scariest ones. It's the one where the family has dealt with this for a while. They have the experts show up, and they go through this routine like this is just average day. My favorite scene is in the kitchen with the chair, where he just nonchalantly goes, "Oh, yeah, by the way." He puts the chair down and it moves across the room, and it's just like, and they're just like,
I get tired of trying to like state my case with you people.
they just played along like, yeah, this happens, and you know, this happens, and that's what I loved parts of it, is that they worked, even though they had the scariest freaking clown scene ever in the history of movies. That damn clown made me scared of clowns dolls. Not clowns, just clown dolls for like ever. I had stuffed animals. I had stuffed animals. Of course, I watched the film a lot younger, like a lot of us for horror films. We watched them a lot younger than we should have been watching them. I had to turn some of my stuffed animals around so they wouldn't look at me, because that freaking movie, that clown scene, folks, in Poltergeist, if you haven't for some reason seen it yet, see it. It's the clown scene. Scariest damn scene, I swear.
It's either Poltergeist or Close Encounters, which Spielberg, of course, did direct, yes, that has the monkey symbol toy. And when I was a kid, all I could think of when I saw this is, who the hell gets that creepy toy for their kids? Like, oh, thank you for the nightmare fuel, Grandma. I hate you.
Paul, any thoughts on Poltergeist?
I agree with the clown. The tree was also a scary thing for me.
God, yeah.
So, yeah, those both scenes.
The poor boy. The poor boy.
Tormented.
I mean, everybody talks about the girl and they're here, but that kid, the boy, her brother gets, like, just the shit end of the stick. No matter what.
Almost literally.
Almost literally. The doll and the freaking tree, it's like, dude, just go away, you know?
Or at the end where they throw the TV out of the room, you know?
Oh, yeah, he rolls it out of the room. That was a perfect ending to that film, was just... They go to the hotel room and he just wheels the TV out of the room. And it was so great, you know. And I think there's some horror filmmakers out there, especially from the indie scene, that still kind of try to capture that subtlety with their horror. But your mainstream horror really seems to have lost subtlety until The Babadook. I'm going to plug it now. I had a chance to see the screener of The Babadook. It's coming out on video on demand for Halloween. I'm hoping to get this episode out tomorrow so you hear about it, but I think they're going to release it limited for video on demand, and then it's going to hit theaters in November. But The Babadook is old school horror. All these horror films we talked about tonight, definitely it has those feels. It doesn't rely on the jump scares. It uses camera angles and shadows better than any modern horror film I've seen in quite some time. Really, if you get a chance to see it on video on demand this weekend, check it out, and it's worth the money. I loved it, every minute of it. So I'll stop gushing about that one now. But but I think we're going to wrap up this eve. I want to thank everybody here for joining us in and talking about these Halloween films and this Halloween podcast. Hope you've enjoyed listening to it. And I know a few of these films we've brought up before, but there's a reason why we bring them up all the time, is because they are great and they really should be on your list to watch if they aren't already. So let's go down the list real quick here. And if you got something to plug, plugs now. Mr. Gonzerific, go ahead, sir.
Oh, well, I did want to say thank you for having me on. And I do want to say thank you, Scott, for also picking Night of the Demons, because I sabotaged my section on Night of the Demons quite early on. So I'm glad you brought it home and we actually got to talk about it legitimately. If you guys want to get somebody's movies on Amazon On Demand for cheap, I have three films available. They are Pajama Nightmare, Mondo Gonzo, and Fake Blood. And I did want to quickly mention, when we're talking about PG horror, the movie Monster House is a highly recommended Halloween time horror movie that children can watch. And it is, if you like Monster Squad or The Goonies or The Burbs, it's like all of that 80s stuff mixed up together. It's a fantastic film, and it's one the whole family can watch. There's no violence in it. It's a cartoon, so it probably won't mess you up like the ones for children when I was a kid. But Monster House, it never gets mentioned on Halloween, and I absolutely love that movie.
Oh, that's a good suggestion. Yeah, actually, I really enjoyed it. That's better than I thought it would be, too.
I just want to mention it very quick, but in terms of animation, the one I do like to watch every year on Halloween is actually Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah. There's a lot of good stop motion. Frankenweenie and Paranorman, both in the same
those are really good ones.
Yeah, we could talk about those if you really want.
No, it's cool. They were just I just recently did an article about kid-friendly horror movies, and those were all on it.
Those are all good, though. I really love the Frankenweenie one, if people haven't seen that one. Don't let just because Tim Burton did a short and then is doing a full feature is stop motion. There are so many horror references in there, including a Hammer horror film that he has play on the TV, which some people who are familiar with Hammer horror will catch.
Yeah. Well, what I want to mention is that, you know, stuff like Hotel Transylvania, which makes like five times the money that those did, is a comedy. It's not a horror movie. Yeah. Frankenweenie, Paranorman, Ghost House, and really, or Monster House, really, Coraline, Corpse Bride, these these are actually scary movies. Coraline actually probably too scary for children. It's got a lot more in common with Invaders from Mars. Actually, it's quite, I forgot how disturbing it was, but all those are actually have genuinely horrific moments, not unlike a William Castle movie, but they also, you know, they do have the humor and stuff, but yeah, Frankenweenie, if you like Godzilla movies, if you like, I mean, you gotta see Frankenweenie. It's like Universal and Turbo put together.
It is. It's an awesome. It was a lot better than I thought it would end up being. And Tim Burton really should just stick to making stop motion animation.
And that sequel. Oh God! Now I'm thinking that when the science teacher goes off on everybody for being dumb, he's like, "You're like a child that sees a balloon." You're afraid of science like a child is afraid of a balloon.
Great kids films. So if you're looking for kids films, Corpse Bride, Paranorman.
Monster House, Frankenweenie, Paranorman. It's just, I hate the thought that, you know, we talk about all these gory movies and stuff, and you know, people are like, well, I want to see a horror movie, something scary, but I don't want it to, like, you know, mess me up. Those movies are solid, too, and they deserve to be talked about. Mm-hmm. I would do if I was putting Night of the Demons on as part of a, you know, mini festival, I'd show Monster House also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Paranorman was scarier than I thought it would be.
Dude, Paranorman is my favorite movie of 2012. Don't start this at the end of your show, Mark.
Okay. We could do a whole... I should keep that in mind. Maybe next year around Halloween, we'll do kids Halloween horror. Or
PG horror, or PG-13
horror. Or PG horror. I'll have to put that down. Maybe we'll put that as a future spoiler room. Good suggestion there. Because now that you mention it, Andrew, my brain is going wild, and I'm like, oh, wow, this one and this one. So
you should do it. You know what? You should do a spoiler room on family-friendly horror films, you know, horror films to inundate the youngins that'll mess them up for life but might open up the door.
Well, keep an eye on that, folks. You're looking at a future podcast being planned right here. So thank you, Mr. Andrew Scheer. Please check out his films on Amazon. They're not much, and they're yet a lot of fun to watch.
Especially
the price you pay. So, Paul, did you have any website or anything that you wanted to plug online?
I'm starting a new review website just for myself. It's called ForsakenFilmReviews.wordpress.com.
Awesome. Always good. I look forward to seeing those reviews up there. And Mr. Scott Davis, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, and if you're looking for something, you know, sweet to, you know, watch with your loved one this Halloween, I would recommend the Camp Cuddly Pines Power Tool Massacre. it's got cuddly right in the title. Look it up.
Wow.
But no, you can catch me. I got sick of having a million different places for people to go because I do a little bit here and a little bit there. So right now, everything is concentrated at the newly revamped Moviocrity.com, Moviocrity, Moviocrity.com. It's got new reviews that I'm writing. Whenever I pop in on a show like this, it's on there. Whenever I do a new episode of Moviocrity or Cinema Obsession or whatever else, it's going to be on there. Moviocrity.com for all your Scott Davis needs.
And finally, the one and only Mr. Tony Estrada. Please, sir, plug your stuff, sir, so everyone knows where they can find you at.
Ah!
Find me at 22 Tiger Dude 22, Tiger Dude, all lowercase, at youtube.com/22TigerDude. You could also like my Facebook page, 22TigerDude. Same with Instagram, 22TigerDude. And you could follow me at Twitter at TigerDude22.
I'm not sure if you had the Vlad going on or the Tony Soprano going on there, but either one, I think it works for you, sir.
Hey,
did I ever tell you?
Then he
feeds
off you.
In addition to doing a PG horror podcast, I think we should do a podcast where we all talk like that.
There we go. We'll put that in, and we'll make sure Tony is on that one as well.
10 years so. In Jersey, I could probably pull it off.
Thank you very much, Tony. All great stuff for everyone. You can catch these podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, as well as specialmarkproductions.com, where you can find all my stuff. I have links to the recent stuff I do on my channel, youtube.com/specialmark. But if you don't want to go to the channel, you can go to Special Mark Productions, where you get a link to all the latest stuff, including a playlist of all the stuff I've done on We Live Film. You can find this podcast, plus I've made an archive page now, so it's a little bit easier to find all the old podcast episodes that we have. So now I think we've got like 15 now, actually, all together posted. So between all the ones. So thank you very much for tuning in and listening to our Halloween podcast. Hope everyone has a safe and fun Halloween season. And remember, with the spoiler room, as always, the films are fresh. Or excuse me, the discussion's fresh, but the films are definitely spoiled. Boy, I gotta get out of here. Good night, folks.